6 months before Charles Whitman stuck his rifle over the edge of the clock tower at UT Austin, he visited a school psychiatrist.
And Whitman admitted to the psychiatrist that he had a violent fantasy of going to the top of the tower with a deer rifle and shooting people.
That's Gary Laverne, who wrote A Sniper in the Tower. It was the first book-length study of Whitman.
Now, the psychiatrist claims that, you know, he's heard in therapy with many students and many faculty and staff, people fantasize violently like that.
It's very common. It's a common experience.
This is Maurice Heatley in 1966. He's the UT psychiatrist who saw Whitman before the shooting.
For students who come to the mental hygiene clinic as patients to refer the tower as the site of some desperate action, they say, I feel like jumping off of the old tower. There were no psychotic symptoms at all. I recall him giving me the impression that he would return.
Whitman never went back to the clinic. It's hard to imagine now, but this was a time when mass shootings weren't part of American life, when people never thought twice about gathering in public or sitting in a crowded theater. After the shooting, Texas Governor John Connally could barely find words.
Well, of course, I'm concerned, disturbed, and yet somewhat at a loss to know how you prevent a maniacal act. Of a man who obviously goes berserk.
Maniac. Berserk. 50 years later, when news about Dallas or Orlando or San Bernardino hits, our reactions are much the same. We assume the shooter is insane and that crimes like these could be avoided if so-called crazy people didn't have guns. Which raises two questions. First, was Charles Whitman mentally ill? And second, could policies focusing on mental health prevent mass shootings? Let's start with number one. Was Whitman mentally ill? Writer Gary Laverne doesn't think so. Whitman, he says, had common mental health challenges, depression, anxiety, but more than anything, he was manipulative.
He was always who he was expected to be. In front of his father-in-law, he at times appeared to be a dutiful husband, when in fact he assaulted his wife, just like his daddy assaulted his mother. And he gave people the impression he was an honor student, when in fact, when he died, he had a 1.9 grade point average.
Charles Whitman did seem to think something was wrong with him. Just listen to a note he left with his wife's body. I talked to psychiatrist Paul Applebaum, whose research at Columbia University focuses on mental health and gun violence. I asked him to read an excerpt of Whitman's note.
I don't really understand myself these days. I'm supposed to be an average, reasonable, and intelligent young man. However, lately, I can't recall when it started, I've been a victim of many unusual and irrational thoughts. These thoughts constantly recur. I felt overwhelming violent impulses.
Whitman didn't mention he'd also been abusing drugs, amphetamines like Dexedrine. But the potential impact of those chemicals fizzled out of the conversation as soon as a pathologist made a striking discovery in Whitman's autopsy, a discovery that would become the stuff of tongue-in-cheek folklore.
There was a rumor about a tumor nestled at the base of his brain.
Musician Kinky Friedman wrote about the tumor in his 1973 Ballad of Charles Whitman.
Who are we to say the boy's insane?
That tumor is still a big question mark. One doctor said the grayish-yellow mass wasn't a factor. But later, a medical panel diagnosed it as a glioblastoma and said it could have contributed to Whitman's inability to control his emotions and actions. Pathologist Elizabeth Burton agrees it's possible.
You can have headaches, you can have seizures, you can have changes in cognition, and you can actually have personality changes.
Here's the thing. Plenty of people have brain tumors, and plenty of people have depression or anxiety or paranoia, which brings us to question two. Could policies aimed at mental health prevent mass shootings? Psychiatrist Paul Applebaum points out that only a tiny fraction of violence is attributable to mental illness. In the U.S., just 4%.
We know that people with serious mental disorders are at somewhat elevated risk of committing violence. even so, the vast majority of them never commit a violent act. And we know that people with serious mental illnesses are much more likely to end up as victims of violence rather than as perpetrators.
That's something you almost never hear in the political discussions after a mass shooting like the one in Dallas or Orlando. In fact, one of the few things you do hear from both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton is a focus on mental illness.
We have got to keep guns out of the hands of people who should not have them. Domestic abusers, people with serious mental health problems.
No matter what you do, guns, no guns, it doesn't matter. You have people that are mentally ill, and they're going to come through the cracks.
After a shooter killed 20 children in Newtown, President Barack Obama called for a gun crackdown. That didn't happen. But Obama did add an additional $500 million to his 2017 budget for mental health services. Applebaum says this is a misguided approach.
We need more funding for treatment of people with mental illness in this country, but to argue for that funding on false grounds, namely to try to persuade the public that it will protect them if only we have more mental health clinics, in the long run can only backfire.
What's striking, looking back 50 years, is how little our reactions to gun violence have changed. For the Texas Standard, I'm Lauren Silverman in Dallas.